Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 30th of March, recording at 9:48 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights here today. I'm going to look at the highlights for the week, as this is the big picture long-term outlook Friday audio. Now, in terms of stock markets, starting with Asia, the ASEAN sector has kept quite firm. It's been just a standout throughout this whole bull cycle. Now, China, on the other hand, after a reasonable start, quite a good start to the year, has been falling since the middle of March, or since the 14th of March, when it had that big downside key day reversal. And it's retraced over half of its gains. So it's currently underperforming, and that's helped to drag the Hong Kong and Hang Seng index and the Hong Kong HSCEI index lower as well. So the China sector is underperforming here generally. Japan had a very good run, but we've seen some downward dynamics in the banks recently after a very strong advance, Japanese banks. And there's a bit of loss of momentum there. And the banks are, of course, a lead indicator. And TSE2, which I'd pointed out recently, is also underperforming somewhat. India, which was another Asian underperformer, saw a rebound here today, but right where it needed to. But it's still overall an underperformer. European stock markets have had a mixed week. Some loss of momentum evident overall. And we've had some of the markets that had been of greater concern, Spain, Italy, they've been underperforming here. And the banks, the European banks, have also underperformed this week. Wall Street's fared better, far better, and closed upwards today on the S&P, up 5 at 1408. The NASDAQ, interestingly, today was down slightly as the share price of Apple slipped just back beneath the 600 level. And long-dated government bond prices, we had seen them edging higher. You remember, about 3 weeks ago, they had those big downward dynamics completing top areas, and then they were edging back higher in a technical rally. And we've seen rally back up underneath the top areas, and we've seen a small downside key day reversal in the U.S. 30-year bond here today. And JGBs and the other bond futures have lost upside momentum following these little technical rallies. In precious metals, we've seen a little bit of recovery in here today, and silver, showing, I'm not sure this figure that's showing right at the moment is accurate. I'm just having an additional look at that. It's currently showing at 32.20. It was up considerably higher not long ago, up in the 32.62 levels. Just a little bit of ranging here this week. Ditto platinum, palladium has been a little bit easier, but firmer today. And gold, it's been a quiet week overall, really, 1668. In currencies, we've had a quietly steady euro, 133.46 as I speak. Sterling also a bit steady against the US dollar at 1.60. The Aussie dollar, on the other hand, has eased a little bit further, 1.036. And generally, the greenback has been a little bit easier on the week, but very much range bound. No big drama there in the currency markets. One other, the yen has steadied a little bit. It was moving south fast against the dollar for a number of weeks following the change in BOJ policy, but has lost downside momentum. In other words, the dollar has lost upside momentum against the yen. Crude oil prices backed off their highs. A little bit steadier today at 123 for the Brent contract, and the WTI has edged up to 103. Grains and beans had been quite weak in anticipation of this latest USDA report. Remember, on the last USDA report was what when was that? I think that was in January. The market plunged as analysts had underestimated the supplies, or so it seemed. Well, today the USDA's report caught them going the other way because the grains and beans had fallen sharply. Although I'm talking about really about corn particularly, but also soybeans coming down a bit and wheat coming down fairly sharply. But the USDA lowered those forecasts significantly, thus vindicating people like our friend John McIntosh, who'd said that they were. He's been saying that they were wrong for quite some time. So we had corn move limit up here today, taking it back up to 644, and we had strong gains also in soybeans and wheat. I think those are the main highlights on the week overall. Okay, so what's going on and where are we going in terms of this big picture? Well, first, let's take the Nasdaq here, which had a small decline today. It's just been a spectacular move to the upside, and led by the mighty Apple. Now, Apple, and I mentioned that it eased back below the $600 level here today. It's hardly surprising, but overall, that trend looks a little tired. Here, and there's nothing conclusive in terms of confirming that we see a peak, but the overextension is so great that I can't help feeling that a medium-term peak is close at hand for Apple, and then that would probably pull back. Well, it would, I think, would unquestionably pull back the high-flying Nasdaq as well. Now, this would only be a corrective phase. It could be a medium-term corrective phase. Such are some of the overextensions to the upside. But on a longer-term basis, I mean, I think the tech remains a fabulous sector, at least for the companies that are able to hold their edge. RIM, the BlackBerry manufacturer in Canada, has not been able to do that, and so the shares has really, really suffered. So it's an intensely competitive sector, and it's also a sector where, given the rate of technological innovation that's taking place, obsolescence can occur fairly quickly. Remember, it wasn't very long ago that the BlackBerry was the one hand device that people were most pleased to have. Well, that's all changed. Now, however, that growth in technological innovation, and really it's an exponential trend, as I've described it on many occasions, causes tech to be more exciting, really, than it's ever been before, and it's becoming steadily more exciting with all of the breakthroughs and developments and consumer products that are occurring. So I think on a long-term basis, you've got to be a pretty big bull of the tech sector generally. Now there will be inevitably corrections, and we'll get volatile periods. There are bear markets from time to time, but we're in a cyclical bull market here right now. And the only negative point that I'll make about tech is that it's overextended and due for some mean reversion towards the towards the MA. Wall Street in general has been very much in form overall, not least because although the growth has been slow, companies have been highly disciplined, and so their profits have generally been pretty good. The key factor here, or a key factor, has been the steroids in the form of quantitative easing. So that has helped Wall Street enormously. Now, the S&P and the Dow, they're not as overbought as the NASDAQ, or overstretched, I should say, as the NASDAQ in here, but they've had terrific runs, and we shouldn't be surprised if we see slowing of momentum overall as we move into April and May. I expect that, but also still within the confines of this secular bull market, because I don't think Mr. Bernanke is going to be raising interest rates anytime soon. But a headwind may be more difficult for these corporations to maintain their rates of profit growth. That's one possible concern. And I think the US economy may not prove quite so strong as people are actually hoping. So I'd be a little cautious about all that going forward. Now, what about Asia? The problem here, where we have a problem, and that's in China and India. The problem is one of, for India in particular, a tighter monetary policy. We had those 13 quarter point interest rate hikes to curb inflation. They've still got an inflation problem, and the stock market is suffering against that environment. And despite its very good start to the year, well, it was a great January and February, but March has been a has seen it retreat. Although it's still above its 200-day moving average. Now, China, on the other hand, is not. The China A shares have way underperformed. They were again were looking good this year until the 14th of March, when that downside key day reversal occurred. And we've seen China give up over half of its rally. So here also, we're awaiting a more accommodative monetary policy, and the current jockeying for position in China's sort of 5-year political changeover phase, which is underway. May be a further distraction in here. But the China A shares are a serial underperformer this year. We've seen that before, a serial underperformer last year. You might remember back in the, I'm posting these charts today, so you'll be able to review it on the on the website in comment of the day, or of course anytime in the library. But over the last decade, China did not perform when Wall Street took off, just as the Gulf War was getting underway in March 2003. And China really didn't begin to move. It just drifted downwards for a couple of more years, and it wasn't until nearly 3 years, actually, it wasn't until 2006 that China began to stage a very strong catch-up move. And it led out of the blocks following the 2008 crash, but then China tightened its monetary policy in August of 2009, leading to another lengthy period of underperformance, which persists through today. So it's interesting because China, which has a considerably better GDP growth rate than most other countries, and its equity valuations are now very competitive, all it needs is that one catalyst. When that occurs, and we'll see the confirmation on the charts when that A-share index pushes back up above, well, first it'll throw in some upward dynamics and then push back above 2600, resuming its recovery and going into its own cyclical bull market. But we're going to have to wait until we start to see those upward dynamics, and the pullback here is just delayed. The pullback during the second half of March has just delayed China's eventual or ch recovery and next bull run. And the I mentioned the ASEAN stock markets, they're still the runaway relative strength leaders in that area. Europe's had a good year so far, but you know that those problems are going to come back and bite us from time to time, or bite the European markets from time to time. The recovery is going to be a very long one, and it would not be surprising to see the troubled markets just remain in permanent ranges. And I'm thinking Spain, I'm thinking Italy, Portugal, Greece. Ireland's doing better against that background. But following the huge relief of seeing Super Mario Draghi, the new ECB head, having seen him become lender of last resort in a big way, and provide that I think over a trillion euros for the European banks, and that bolstered confidence dramatically, as you know. But now, once the stock markets became overextended, we're now in a period of sort of reassessment. So don't be surprised again if we see a little bit weaker performance in these stock markets. But keep an eye on the bank sector because the more that w drifts downwards, the more those concerns will grow. I don't think it'll go down significantly, but more importantly, it needs to break out to the upside, and it's right in a trading range, which you can see very clearly. It needs to break out to the upside, really, to indicate that confidence is really improving once again. And I think I pretty much covered the stock markets here for the time being. Now, these long-dated government bond prices, I mentioned the technical rally back up underneath the top formations. So if you look at yields, long-dated yields, you'll see them s after the spike upwards that we had in the beginning of the month, you've seen them ease back down towards the small bases that are evident on the charts. And this is just about where I would expect to see some support. And so I think the next move for yields is more likely to be somewhat higher, either range sideways and move somewhat higher. And therefore, I'm looking for those bond prices to ease back. I will say, and in all honesty, not for the first time, I will say that that 30-year bull market in long-dated government bonds is over. That means I preempted it. I thought it was ending back before we saw that 2008 crisis, and that completely changed time horizon and gave the bond markets another 2 to 3 year run. No more. I think it's well and truly over this time. So expect those yields to push up. Central banks can help to slow that move, but probably not prevent it. And the closer we get to any kind of economic normalization, which means interest rates, short-term interest rates going back to more normal levels, economic normalization, again, it may take months or even a matter of years in some instances, we would then hope to see stronger GDP growth generally and a higher short-term interest rates, and that would certainly also mean a higher yields on these long-dated government bonds. So that's a dangerous area to be in from an investment perspective. If you want yield, go for high-yielding equities or high-yielding corporate bonds, but I would prefer the high-yield equities. And during this consolidation period, and it may be a correction for some stock markets that we're expecting in the weeks and months ahead, I would think that some of those high-yield blue chip companies that aren't overextended would be among the better relative performers overall. Moving on to currencies, I think it's very heartening to see the stability that we have here right now. For once, we don't have talk of a crisis. For so long, and there was a talk of a euro crisis. All last year there was certainly talk of a euro crisis, and before that there was talk of a U.S. dollar crisis. And there has been justifiable talk of a yen crisis of strength, not weakness, unlike the other two that I mentioned. But I hope for Japan's sake that we do see that yen decline resume. It's been abundantly clear for a very long time that the Bank of Japan is ambivalent about that, to put it mildly. But I think best bet, because Japan needs it economically in terms of preventing too extreme a hollowing out of its economy, it needs to see a weaker yen overall, and that would be a tonic for Japan's stock market. And I think that will actually take place. So I would expect the yen to weaken in the months and years ahead. But I don't think it's going to go in any form of free fall, and therefore I think we can look forward to a period of currency stability more often than not, at least based on what's on the horizon. Now, the further you try to peer ahead on the horizon, the more difficult or tricky it gets. But for now, at any rate, and for at least the medium-term future, I think we're going to be living in a world of comparative stability among currency rates, and that, we haven't seen that for a while. Looking at the commodity sector and oil prices, as I've said on so many occasions, this is the second of two dangerous decades in terms of tight supplies of crude oil. In the next decade, I'm very optimistic that we will actually see oil prices lower in real terms. I don't know, that means inflation-adjusted terms. And a key reason for that is, of course, the shale oil and also the shale gas. And we see how much the United States is benefiting from this very cheap natural gas relative to the prices that are being paid elsewhere. And we can expect, as I say, this shale gas development and shale oil development to expand worldwide, despite a lot of reservations about the fracking process. And my own take on that is that as the technology improves, they'll make it safer, steadily safer in terms of groundwater supplies and the environment generally. And we certainly need that shale oil and shale gas. And it will be developed, and that will really be fueling the next major advance in global GDP growth. That's a long-term forecast about which I feel reasonably confident. Now, as growth picks up, though, we can expect periodic tightening in upward pressure in other commodity prices. We're not seeing that in industrial metals right now. They're fairly soft, less so for copper, but the others are nickel is well down. And while that's a drag on the mining shares at this time, it's helpful in terms of keeping some of those costs down. Steel costs be declining in here against that background. So we're in a period where we're not experiencing extreme commodity price inflation, thank heavens. But this move upwards in the grain and bean complex here today just shows that there's no grounds for complacency. And if we were to get a bad crop season, heaven forfend, another bad crop season, that would cause problems. But the biggest risk in the commodity sector in the short to medium term remains the crude oil price. It's currently a headwind, but there's been a lot of speculation in that market, or a lot of hedging against a possible attack on Iran's nuclear installations, and so that's been the major concern overall. Hopefully, we don't see a spike in crude oil prices, in which case that will help to keep inflationary pressures at bay. That will help to encourage the Asian economies like China and India to become a little bit more stimulative in their monetary policies. That would be very good for global GDP growth and their stock market performance. And on that note, I think I'll bring this to a close and just wish you all an excellent weekend. And of course, watch out for the April 1st, April Fool's Day pranks. All the best.